On this holiday celebrating independence in America, we turn next to independence in Africa. On June 30th, the Democratic Republic of the Congo celebrated 50 years of freedom from foreign rule. But it's been a difficult 50 years, especially the last dozen or so. 5.4 million people died during and since a war that forced millions to flee the country and left the economy reeling. The irony of that, of course, is that Congo is home to rare animal species, rainforest, and highly valuable minerals and natural resources. Much of the cobalt used to make lithium, those batteries in hybrid cars, and 80% of the world's coltan, which is used in cell phones and laptops, comes from the Congo. Now, of course, there's hope that such resources can help charge the nation's economy, but those resources have also been a source of conflict. With us to look back and ahead at independence in this key country in Africa, we have Amira Woods, co-director of Foreign Policy in Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies, with a special emphasis on Africa and the developing world. Also with us, Nicole Lee, president of the Trans-Africa Forum. Ms. Lee has worked as a human rights attorney in Africa, Latin America, and the Caribbean, and is a regular contributor to National Newspapers Publishers Association Wire Service. I welcome you both back, I should say. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for doing this segment, Michelle.
Now, 50 years ago, on June 30th, the first Prime Minister of the Congo, Patrice Lumumba, gave this famous Independence Day speech. He declared, quote, "It is indispensable to put an end to the humiliating slavery which was imposed upon us by force." He went on to declare, "We are not going to rule by peace of guns and bayonets, but by peace of the heart and the will." So I want to ask each of you, has those 50 years since lived up to that promise? Nicole, perhaps you'd like to start.
Well, first, I think it's important to understand the context by which he was making that speech. I mean, this was after the Belgian king basically stood up and said, well, here you go. We've given you all development. We have ensured that this country can thrive. And the fact of the matter is, I would think Patrice Lumumba looked around him and realized, absolutely not. That is not what happened. And he really went off script when he decided to discuss really what had happened. What was the history? It was a history of slavery, a brutal repression. The Belgians certainly did not provide development. What they provided was oppression. They provided just another form of slavery. It's almost like discussing how blacks were treated in the South as if before the Civil War, as if somehow or another that was a gift, that slavery was a gift that was given to them. And so Patrice Lumumba was trying to point out that his vision of the Congo was a country whereby people would live in peace and harmony. Now, we need to note that very soon after he made that speech, he was murdered. He was assassinated. And so the Congo that he envisioned, unfortunately, has not come to pass. But we have to also recognize that the reason why it has not come to pass, in part, is because that the Europeans, as well as the United States, both governments and corporations, have done everything they could to ensure that Congo worked for people within the international community instead of a Congo that worked for the people of Congo.
Amira, you may want to add to that, but I did want to ask that Mobutu Sese Seko, who many people will remember perhaps more than Lumumba because of Lumumba's short term in leadership, went on to rule for some 30 years. What distinguished his leadership?
Well, we have to say, first of all, what distinguishes the Congo? It is the incredible richness that you talked about at the opening of the segment. That's why the Belgians were interested in the Congo. It is the richness of the Congo, as is the richness of much of Africa, that forced the colonizers to look there to actually support their economic gain, to support the global economy then, and I have to say now as well. Let's remember, Lumumba was a man of the people. His goal was to have the riches of the Congo actually feed the children of the Congo. And he was killed by the U.S. and the U.K. It's all now, thanks to Freedom of Information Act and other sources, it's all been clearly documented. Lumumba was killed and Mobutu was put in place. Why? Because he served the interests of those external actors. Let's remember, 90% of U.S. and U.K. engagement in Africa is oil, gas, and mining. These mining interests have had a play really for decades now. Okay. It is those interests that held Mobutu in power for 40 years. It is those interests that have tried to manipulate a political process that has actually held the people of Congo at bay for decades now.
And as you pointed out, much of this history is well documented, but I also think that many people would appreciate hearing what role that governance plays, of self-governance plays in perpetuating these conditions, because I think that's also something that people deserve to hear something about. I mean,
without
the fact is this
doubt.
Area is the Eastern Congo, as I think many people know, is the site of what is many people consider the most lethal conflict since World War II. It's been described as the rape capital of the world. And as we've also mentioned, many millions of people have been slaughtered in the course of this conflict. So I think people would appreciate hearing, why has this occurred?
Well, it has occurred because people basically sustain a process whereby these resources can flow out of the country. So you clearly, we talk often about multinational corporations, oil, gas, and mining companies, very much active in the Congo for the last four decades. So it has been this complex mix of local proxies and international actors, both governmental, non-governmental, both military uniformed, and now we see increasingly private military contractors that are operating in these resource-rich zones. And the result is essentially that women and children are left paying the highest price. They are the ones on whose land the resources lie, and yet still they end up living in deplorable conditions. 5.6, some say the number is even higher than that, million people, mostly women and children, having lost their lives. The high incidence of rape and sexual violence being used really to exacerbate and to make sure that the flow of resources continues unabated.
Nicole, is it your view that Congo has never really been independent, that it's in essence still a proxy?
Chaos in the Congo has always benefited the international community. Chaos in the Congo benefits our corporations, because as long as we have chaos, people can't begin to ask the real questions about real democracy, about really where are these resources going, and why aren't the people of Congo benefiting from the resources of their own land? You can't ask those questions when you are being raped or forced from your home, or you have not eaten, or your children are afraid. You can't ask those higher level questions of democracy. And until we allow for there to be peace in the Congo, until we allow people of the Congo to really benefit from their own resources, from their own land, we will not see peace there.
And when you say that we, who is this we, and how would that be actualized? What is your charge to the international community?
I certainly am not going to tell your listeners to throw out their cell phones, but I am going to tell them to think about what's at stake. What did that cell phone really cost in lives and in blood? How can we, as consumers, call attention to the corporations that are mining these minerals, that are making our laptops, for example? How can we call attention to their practices and ensure that the workers that are mining actually have a better way of life than how the corporations actually found them?
Amira, what do you have to say about that? What is your charge during this period of recognizing the independence
well,
of this
country? Well,
absolutely,
we have to hold the corporations accountable. But we also have to hold the U.S. government accountable. Right now, the U.S. has continued to, even under an Obama administration, really, has continued the flow of weapons into the DR Congo.
How do you know that?
Well, because we now recognize that both in terms of direct military sales and training, there has been a coupling of the administration's foreign policy with the military in the Congo, as well as in Rwanda. So you have almost both sides of this very difficult region being fueled with weapons thanks to U.S. taxpayer dollars. So the first step is stop the weapons from flowing. Often we have picked sides, and really the Congo is the best example. Since independence, we've picked the wrong side, and we are continuing now to side primarily with militaries.
Do you think that the Congo is any closer to prosperity or real independence, if you want to call it that, than it was 50 years ago?
I think freedom is elusive, and right now there needs to be attention paid to allowing the people of the Congo to actually take their destiny in their own hands.
And I think by freedom, I think what we would consider a modicum of human dignity, an ability to determine one's own life course.
Choosing
without
your
free
leaders
of
freely.
Oppression.
Absolutely, Michelle. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Choosing those leaders freely, holding them accountable. For far too long, the people of the Congo have not had the opportunity to do that.
And you're saying they still don't?
They still don't. Really, you have had one election really since independence, and that election many saw as flawed because of the control of corporations, because of the control of armies.
Nicole, I'm going to ask you the last question as we close. Why should people here care about this issue?
We have to think about the fact that ethically, as people on this planet, we know we're all connected, but the truth of the matter is when we allow rape, when we allow torture, when we allow the deaths of people, when we allow people to be exploited and have their land exploited, that does take a bit of humanity away from how we treat ourselves, how we treat other Americans, how we treat people in our own neighborhoods, quite frankly. And so ensuring that Congo has a brighter future, frankly, ensures the United States has a brighter future.
Nicole Lee is the president of the Trans-Africa Forum. Ms. Lee has worked as a human rights attorney in Africa, Latin America, and the Caribbean. She's a regular contributor to National Newspaper Publishers Association Wire Service. She was here with us in our Washington, D.C. studio. Amira Woods also joined us in our studio. She's co-director of Foreign Policy in Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies, and she's an expert on U.S. foreign policy with a special emphasis on Africa and the developing world. And ladies, I'm going to say Happy Independence Day to you both.
Thank you.
Happy Independence, Michelle.